I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story.
Where's the mouse? Psst, where's the mouse? Get a mouse! Get a mouse!
In the past few months, rural communities throughout eastern Australia have been besieged by mice.
If we don't significantly reduce the number of mice that are in plague proportions by spring, we are facing an absolute economic and social crisis.
This is yet another blow for communities trying to bounce back from the pandemic.
But for the plague, things are turning around in our region.
With the New South Wales state government facing allegations that they've been slow to respond.
Why has it taken so long to offer help?
The problem is that all of the traditional means that have been used in the past decades to treat mice infestations and mice plagues just simply haven't dented the population. They've proved incredibly resistant.
Today, when will the mouse plague end? It's Monday, the 24th of May. Hello.
Oh, hello.
So, Matilda, you've kind of become a bit of a de facto mouse reporter over the past couple of months. What's that been like for you?
Horrifying in every single possible way.
Matilda Bosley is a reporter at Guardian Australia.
I've probably seen a lot more pictures of piles of dead mice than I ever thought I was going to in my career.
What types of things have you seen?
So, you know, you have your classics, which are just kind of giant piles of hay that look like they're, you know, quivering with mice bodies.
It's raining mice.
Buckets and buckets full of, like, mice fished out of swimming pools. One of the weird things I've been sort of talking to is parents sort of proudly talking about their evening activities with kids, which is, like, building fatal mice traps now. Like, killing mice has become, like, a family activity, which I feel like it's definitely part of people's everyday life.
Okay, so what have you found out about how this mouse plague actually started and when it started as well?
I think it can be a little frustrating because there isn't just a clear answer about what caused this. Essentially, mice plagues are something that humans have been dealing with since, like, the invention of agriculture. Mm. And they're quite cyclical in nature. So essentially, when there's big drought and there's not much crops, mice numbers go down, and then suddenly the drought breaks, you have a bumper crop year, the breeding goes insane. And that means that the populations of all these rodents are just going to grow exponentially. And it just gets to the point where they're having babies after babies after babies after babies, and suddenly sort of the whole ground is made of mice, essentially.
So what it sounds like you're saying is that a lot of this is luck and timing and, you know, some of it's quite natural. Is that right?
Yeah, look, a lot of it definitely is luck, but there's also features of kind of human behaviour that contribute to this as well. Mm. So obviously our poisons, our traps, our ways of dealing with mice have grown over the years, but there's also been a big change in the way that we actually farm. So previously, in years gone by, after a harvest season, a lot of farmers would in fact burn a lot of the fallows or the fields. Mm. And that essentially had the effect of removing all of the food for the mice. But now it's best practice, and it's generally considered more ecologically friendly, to leave a lot of those fallows clear, which means that mice kind of have a food source in and around those fields for a lot more of the year. There's lots and lots of places that they can burrow now where they previously wouldn't have been able to.
So did this start in one particular area and kind of spread from there?
I think it's actually a bit hard to say where it, like, specifically started, I guess. I think just by the way it's happened, we think of it at this sort of, like, impending wave sweeping over Australia, but it's a lot more kind of like disparate events popping up everywhere. Mm. So we know that it started around October, November last year, once we had this big bumper harvest. And essentially anywhere that you have a lot of food and reasonably warm conditions, you end up with this huge amount of mice, it seems, this year. Mm. So it's now stretching pretty much everywhere from, like, southern Queensland, even down into the northern regions of Victoria. So it's quite a large area that's being pretty heavily affected by this, but it's definitely pockets within those areas that are having the, like, absolutely colossal consequences.
what do we know about what it's actually like for the people who've been living with this day in, day out?
I think people underestimate how bad it actually is to be in the centre of this.
Hello, how are you?
Awesome, good, thanks. That's just recording now, awesome.
No worries.
Thanks so much for agreeing to have a chat.
So one person I spoke to specifically was Louise, and she lives in a place called Tulimba, which is a town about 500 kilometres west of Sydney.
My daughter's name's Matilda, so I've got time for anyone called Matilda.
It's a very good name. I have to sort of applaud your taste.
Now, she's a nurse. Her husband works in the mines, and they decided they were going to go up for a holiday to far north Queensland for about 4 weeks. And at this time, mice were around, but they hadn't, like, truly hit the town yet.
And we live on a farm, and we've had family dropping in every day, if not every second day, to check on the house because of the mice situation. And there was a four-day period where no one was available to come over and check on the house. And in that four-day period, they just ran rampant.
Essentially, she described it to me as them opening the door and just thousands of mice being inside there.
We had new carpet laid down last year. They've chewed through the carpet, through the wooden floors. Our oven is no longer functionable anymore. You know, urine and feces is all through it.
She described the house as, like, destroyed.
Our kitchen will need to be replaced, any cupboards that they've been into. To have our daughter stay at other people's house because the house hasn't been okay for her to come back into. Our lounge, we've had to throw our lounge out. When we tipped it up, we found 10 dead mice within the cushionings. So at the moment, we've got piles of stuff around our house that are no longer functionable or we can't use it all.
The cleanup they did lasted days, and then she was telling me that finally she thought she was done, and she takes all her urine-covered clothes to put them in the washing machine.
My partner called me out and he's like, look at this. Inside, we just finished the cycle and here's this dead mice sitting there. And I was like, great.
I think she definitely described that as the final straw.
How does it feel? Like, how did it feel walking through the door and seeing that damage?
I just didn't even know where to begin. I felt sick to my stomach. I just wanted to close it and turn around and walk out, really, to be honest, and just walk away.
Okay, so this sounds like a lot of damage. How much damage is this?
Louise told me all up, she reckons it will have cost them $30,000.
I'm just at the end of my tether. I'm trying to hold it together. And, you know, that's the thing. There are a lot of people out there with a lot more riding on this. We have got jobs and we don't rely on the land. So we can keep, you know, working away and building our life back to some sort of normality. You know, what keeps me going is there's always someone out there that's far worse than what we are.
I mean, we're used to taking losses. You're a farmer, so you've got to take the good with the bad. You know, you have floods, you have droughts, it's just a part of it.
So we know that this plague has been in largely rural areas. How has this impacted businesses like farms?
So one person I spoke to who's essentially in this situation was Ben Storer.
To come out of a drought and then run into a mouse plague, it's a bit hard to take.
So he's a farmer. He lives in a town called Walgett, which is about 300 kilometres north of Dubbo in northwest New South Wales.
After harvest, they really hit. We sort of knew we were going to get them. Because there was enough there at harvest.
And his farm was hit really hard by mice.
Mm.
So he showed me videos he took on the farm of his grain piles, and you couldn't see a single grain. It was covered in mice, millions. Like, not even exaggerating, we would be talking in the millions.
You know, even the cats get sick of chasing them, they just sit there and watch them. So
what kind of impact did this have on his business and his livelihood?
So Ben says they just ruined full crops.
We put sorghum in just before harvest and they've eaten it all off. And all our hay that we did, they've ruined it.
Essentially, they wiped out 800 hectares of sorghum crop and that caused upwards of $200,000 in damages.
And probably $100,000 worth of hay gone. I mean, there's 800 acres, which, yeah, we never even stuck a header into. So,
what kind of impact does that kind of loss have on you and your business?
Well, it's just something you've got to factor in. You've got to factor in mice, plagues. You've got to factor in droughts, although that last drought we came through was very, very hard on everybody. You just got to get on with it.
So what do you actually do if your business and your home is just overrun with mice? How do you even start to try and get rid of them?
The only real thing you can do is called baiting, which is essentially just poisoning grain, laying it out and hoping the mice eat it. And the most common bait that's used is zinc phosphide.
How does that work?
So it does kill the mice, but unfortunately it doesn't kill them straight away.
We got home from a holiday and I made the mistake of poisoning around the house and everywhere. When I got up in the morning, I started trying to cart them away, but there was just too many. There was five dead to the square metre.
So they'll eat it, they'll go off, and when they do die, you have no idea where these carcasses are. They're in the roofs, in the floorboards, everywhere you can imagine.
And then you've got to put up with the smell then for the next, 2 weeks until they disintegrate.
And that just means that this smell of death and this very acidic mice urine just permeates all these towns. People say it's just inescapable. The air's thick with this just horrible stench.
Just putrid. And funny thing is you go to each other's place for a barbecue or whatever and the first thing they say, you'll have to excuse the mice smell. And you say, well, it's no different to our house.
I can only imagine the mental health impacts of being surrounded by that smell day in, day out.
100%. And there's this feeling where people just feel constantly dirty.
Yep. And it's not from being uncleanly or anything like that. You just cannot get rid of these.
And that just has such an impact if you're dealing with that month in, month out.
It's just like, when's this going to stop? When's it going to end? Will it end?
You can't sit around and dwell on it. You just got to bloody keep going, otherwise it'll do you in.
It's sort of like, we'll just hang in there until it finishes.
Next, how some solutions to the mouse plague might hurt more than they help. So, Matilda, it sounds like people like Ben and Louise and many others have been dealing with this for quite some time, months now. Have they been given any support at all from the government?
Well, until pretty recently, the answer to that question was no. So New South Wales has been the hardest hit and the attention's on their government as a result. And there was months-long stretches where essentially no one heard anything from them.
Mm.
The thing is, mice plagues actually kind of go away when the weather turns. So it can be a bit of a risk for governments to step in. Essentially, they're really worried. They'll announce a massive package, they'll spend millions, and then a cold snap will come along the next week and all the rodents will just die off naturally.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that actually kind of was the government's plan. So if you remember the big autumn floods in New South Wales, when we knew they were coming, the government was basically just like, that will deal with it. And that they were really relying on those floods to solve this problem for them.
So the government decided to wait, really, and kind of see what happens naturally to the plague. Did that strategy work?
No, not at all. So the floods reduced numbers in some areas, but wasn't some biblical Noah's Ark reprieve. The populations in other areas just rebounded pretty much immediately.
Mm.
This led the New South Wales Farmers Association and Country Women's Associations to call on the government to label this plague a health emergency and economic emergency and start acting pretty quickly.
Mm.
If I could wave a magic wand, trust me, I would do it. But I'm open to all sorts of suggestions about magic silver bullet solutions. Unfortunately, we don't know of any.
And this actually worked to, I think, possibly their surprise as well. And in early May, the New South Wales government announced a $50 million rescue package for the regions.
We've announced an unprecedented $50 million package. That's just the start. If we need to do more, we will do more. I'd really like the federal government to step up and help as well. And we need everyone putting their shoulder to the wheel.
Yep, without they're tracking south. Minister, we do appreciate your time this morning and we do hope there is...
Okay, so what is in this $50 million package?
So one of the main things is that people will now have access to rebates for poisons and traps and things that they use to kill the mice, and that's $1,000 for small businesses and $500 for households.
$500. How far is that going to go?
Just like one step of a marathon, essentially.
The $500 is really lovely. That's if we're eligible. I haven't been able to get onto the New South Wales website and see if I'm eligible.
For people like Louise, who I mentioned before had up to $30,000 worth of damage to her house, she's now looking into whether she's eligible for this rebate. But at the end of the day, $500 isn't going to make up for much.
You know, $500 won't even buy you, you know, a lounge fee. Like, you know, even at Fantastic Furniture, like a lounge minimum is $1,000. So, and unfortunately, the biggest, I guess, the hardest part for us, and I understand, is our insurance doesn't cover any of it.
And also, a lot of insurance companies deem mice to be a controllable problem, which means that her insurance isn't going to cover any of this.
Yeah, you work hard for your things in your home and you're house proud and you put a lot of time and effort into it. And if someone had come in and broke into our house and trashed it, we'd be covered. But because it's mice, not a thing.
Okay, so that's the rebates. What else is in this package?
So a big chunk of that money is actually going to research. Essentially, they want to create a new, better rodenticide is what they call it for, you know, the next plague down the line. And another big part of it is making sure that farmers, you know, like Ben, will be able to access poison treatments for their grain for free. So essentially, they're setting up these kind of like poison hubs where the farmers will bring their grain and the government will treat it for them for no cost. But I mean, obviously, at the end of the day, like, yeah, it will mean you're saving a little money on bait, but that's never really going to stack up to $200,000 worth of lost crops.
How do you sort of feel about how it's all been handled, you know, from Sydney?
We are very, very used to not having any support from government. I can tell you that much.
Okay, so some small rebates, some free poison. Have they done anything else?
Yeah, so the government's also trying to make more powerful poisons be available for usage by farmers. So already they've approved a double-strength version of just the conventional agricultural mice bait, which is zinc phosphide. That's, you know, legal for farmers to use now. But the government's also sought urgent approval for the use of this different kind of poison called bromodialone, which is super potent, but it's in many ways kind of more dangerous.
How so? What do we know about this poison?
So bromodialone is actually super common. It's the central ingredient in basically all household and industrial rodent baits, but currently you aren't allowed to use it like on a massive agricultural scale. So the New South Wales government's had to lodge an emergency request with the government's sort of central body that controls pesticides, and they're wanting to get this approval for farmers to start tossing it across, you know, across the landscape. And the government's selling this as like the silver bullet. So the agricultural minister for New South Wales, Adam Marshall, told the ABC that it will be the equivalent of napalming mice.
Do we know what using this super strength poison on a larger scale could do to the environment?
Yeah, there's a lot of people who are pretty concerned about this. So I spoke to Dr. Peter Brown, and he's the leader of the rodent management research team at the CSIRO. And the main point he made is unlike zinc phosphide, which is commonly used across the fields, bromodialone actually stays in the body of the mice after they die. Like their carcasses almost become a new sort of little poison package in and of itself. And that means that birds of prey or snakes or anything that feeds on dead mice could actually get a lethal dose themselves, and that's called secondary poisoning. And essentially that can make its way all the way up the food chain, and it can be really devastating.
Do we know how far-reaching those secondary poisonings could go?
No, because essentially we don't have sort of a research base on what bromodiolone would look like on the Australian ecosystem on this wider scale. It just hasn't happened before. We've got some limited research and it shows that it can have all sorts of effects. Like there was research that showed that, you know, potentially owls couldn't breed properly because they could no longer form the sort of proper egg shells to have their babies. Like we really don't have a full grasp on exactly what this means for our environment.
To me, it sounds like the solution could become another new problem in and of itself. Are people really supporting this super strength poison being rolled out?
Yeah, I think across the last couple of months, there's been very much a sense that zinc phosphide hasn't been enough and it hasn't been working. And speaking to the New South Wales Farmers Association, they were saying, like, look, this could have bad environmental impacts, like native animals could die, but also a mouse plague has terrible environmental impacts. It's killing a lot of native animals. And the way that it was described to me was almost as the lesser of two evils.
Government through the APVMA, and we're going to continue to provide as much support as we can as a government. But the reality is that the only thing that will stop these eventually is either stronger poisons, Mother Nature, or a biological control, or a combination of all of the above.
So, Matilda, do we know when this plague could end?
Well, our colleague Anne Davies has been reporting from Central West New South Wales, and she says anecdotally things are calming down. So local people are really attributing that to the cooler weather. And, you know, that is backed up by the leading scientist, Stephen Henry from the CSIRO. So he told me that essentially winter will slow down mice breeding, but it isn't kind of the death blow to a plague. Actually, what causes a plague to end is somewhat more grim.
What do you mean by that?
So temperatures get low, food becomes more scarce, but also when numbers are at all-time high, disease, you know, spreads rampantly across all these sort of giant mice sort of colonies and crowds. And then if that disease coincides with them running out of food, they will start eating the sick mice and the weak mice. And then if there's still no food, they will go back to their burrows and eat all of their babies. And that's how the system falls over. They just eat all of their own babies and the breeding sort of life cycle gets stopped. It's just the worst.
So basically we're relying on cannibalism to do the job for us.
Cannibalism and the poisons and vigilance of farmers and, you know, sort of luck with how the weather goes, especially when it starts getting warmer. It's so many factors that what we have to do really is just sit and wait and see now.
To learn more about the mouse plague, you can read Matilda's coverage, plus an update from reporter Anne Davies, who was in rural New South Wales last week, at theguardian.com. We put a link to those pieces on the full story page. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Joe Koning, Ellen Leibeater, and myself. The executive producers are Gabrielle Jackson and Miles Martignoni. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.